This is a Women Uninterrupted podcast, the space where we host difficult conversations between different generations of women. Brought to you by The Hindu. Hello, I'm your host Anna Thomas on Women Uninterrupted, and with me I have Dr. Shefali Tyagi, an obstetrician and gynecologist with more than 19 years of experience. Welcome, Dr. Shefali. In this episode of Women Uninterrupted, we are talking about what happens during pregnancy loss, both the medical and the psychological aspects. So I asked clinical psychologist Sunanta Kole to join us. Sunanta specializes in mental health concerns related to women across their reproductive lifespan in her private practice. Welcome, Sunanta. I'd like to begin by asking you, what is the best way family and friends can respond and react when a couple undergoes a pregnancy loss?
Thank you for asking that question, Anu. And let me first wish a very good evening to everybody who is listening to this podcast. That's a very good question. When someone has a miscarriage, it could be quite difficult to know how to respond or react, what to say or what not to say. It's difficult because, everybody is different, and what might be okay for someone might be upsetting for the other person. So sometimes people are, friends and family members are just left, just guessing whether to say something or not to say something, or just being scared about what to say at all. But I would say that it is, it's just like pain. It's just bereavement. It's a period of bereavement, and the way to go about it is just saying a simple "I'm sorry" or "I know that this is difficult for you. I do get it," and comforting them and being compassionate and empathetic and supporting them in their experience is important. A lot of times, friends and family members also do think that since it is a very private thing, it's best to leave the person, give them kind of some space. But actually, sometimes that might lead to isolation. So it's best to kind of keep in touch, drop in a text here and there, drop by, just be there for them. And if at all anyone still has a confusion or still is unsure about what to say and how to react, all you can do is just sit and listen, and just listen to them, because just listen to them just saying their feelings out, their thoughts out. I think that's a very validating experience for them, and it gives them a lot of support. So that's what I would say.
Actually, there is a survey that supports that in America, of course, on public perceptions of miscarriage. The survey found that around 41% of respondents felt alone after the miscarriage happened. Dr. Shefali, I have a question from a listener. Often we are advised by our older family members, she writes, not to announce our pregnancy. The unsaid context there is that you could lose the baby early stages. And then there will be lots of questions from relatives and friends. Some blame on mostly how the woman conducted herself. She went to work. She used to drink. She was always stressed, or even she was lazy. What could be the real causes of early pregnancy loss?
So the majority of cases of early pregnancy loss are related to the chromosomes and the DNA in the baby. So if the chromosomes of 46, 23 from sperm or 23 from egg, they don't kind of pair together properly, there's a loss of a part of chromosome, deletion, addition, then the nature gently discards it. That is the commonest reason for pregnancy loss. Apart from that, we can have other reasons. It could be some infections in the early pregnancy, if you had some fever, etc. If there are some antibodies which are forming in your blood, which can actually kind of start the pregnancy. or there could be sometimes genetic factors, the uterus shape, etc., some deformities in the uterus. All this can also contribute, but they are not that prominent. And generally, your eating, drinking, traveling has, majority of times, nothing to do with the pregnancy loss. So unfortunately, it is, you know, that the woman is blamed, that they keep on questioning themselves. I do see in the practice that, you know, what did I do wrong that this happened? But the first thing we want to assure is that it was not under your control. And there is a little wisdom in the elders saying that don't announce it very quickly, because miscarriages are rampant. In fact, every third pregnancy will end up into a miscarriage. So it is better that, you know, you can tell your parents maybe once you test positive. And once the first heartbeat is seen in about 6 to 7 weeks, that time very, very close family members can be told. And once you've crossed your 12, 13 weeks and you enter into your second trimester, then it becomes safer, relatively safer, because if baby is genetically sound, majority of babies will go into second trimester. After that, losses can happen, but they are very rare.
Okay. So can other factors as the usual reasons why what people cite are, well, a woman exercise too much sometimes. It could be that I saw my swimming when I saw her horse riding. There are stress. Is this a stress reason?
I wouldn't say that, you know, stress might like indirectly manifest, but then we cannot put a number or, you know, the amount of stress can lead to. Some people are really stressed. Now, I've had a patient whose husband had a cardiac arrest now in like 24 weeks.
Okay.
So baby's doing well, it didn't lead to a miscarriage. So this can be like, you know, husband almost dying there and you're pregnant. What can be more stressful than that? And we have like office stress or people who are homemakers without too much stress still having a miscarriage. So I don't think so. Stress might be a very, very strongly contributing factor. But of course, we tell you to remain as stress-free as possible in pregnancy.
Okay, what are the signs of early pregnancy loss?
So generally, once you test positive, we ask you to do a practice called beta-HCG. And many times we see that the values of beta-HCG are extremely low. Then only our antenna go up that, you know, this could be a red flag. And so we want to kind of monitor the rise of beta-HCG. Many a times it is not appropriate. How it should double in 48 hours and on, it goes a little off track. That itself gives an indication that this pregnancy might not do well. Then once we do the early pregnancy scan around 6-7 weeks, we see a lot of difference in the date as compared to the growth of the baby. Sometimes the baby is not seen, or the baby is very small, heartbeat is not seen, or there's a big gap, or the heartbeat is very low, there's a big bleeding sitting inside. All these are early warning signs. And physically, women herself can have bleeding, which can be threatening. So, but every bleeding, you don't have to really worry so much. But anytime you have bleeding in pregnancy, should be checked immediately.
What are the non-surgical options available to treat early pregnancy loss?
Nowadays,
actually, a miscarriage at all, what happens when you miscarry at all?
So there used to be a treatment called expectant treatment, where we did not do anything and the nature took its own course. And after a few weeks, the bleeding started and the whole thing came out. This happens occasionally now also, but it's a very unpredictable type of treatment. So working women and who have, you know, fast moving, they cannot keep on waiting for weeks that, okay, my bleeding will start, and whether it will be complete miscarriage, that is another question. So nowadays, expectant treatment is not generally offered. We do have medicines nowadays, which can be the medical treatment for miscarriage, where the medicines alone will start irritating the uterus and push the products out. And then we check on the ultrasound whether it's a complete miscarriage or not. It is important that the miscarriage has to be totally done. It should not be a part of pregnancy is left inside the uterus. Then it can lead to complications later on.
What is the recovery process? How fast can it manage to work? How many days does the recovery take?
In both medical and surgical, the recovery is fairly fast. Medicine is slightly little tougher because it is painful, and after a week we generally get to know whether it's a complete abortion or not. So that is slightly prolonged procedure, but maybe 2 days you can budget for rest in medical termination and maybe 1 day rest in surgical termination. Surgical termination also the recovery is quite fast.
How soon can a woman get pregnant again after a pregnancy loss?
Ideally, they should wait for at least minimum 2 periods to come before they should plan again. So 2 to 3 months is the required gap between pregnancy loss to planning again.
Sunanda, I'd like to ask you, how can a partner help coping with miscarriage or an abortion?
I think there are two things here, two very important ways. There are multiple ways actually in which a partner can help, but the most important ones being providing support in the form of, if the partner wants to vent and talk about her feelings, then it's very important for the partner to validate those feelings and be comforting towards her. The second thing would be communication. So I think that is very, very important, an open form of communication between the both, where the woman obviously feels safe and, in a space where she understands that she can share her feelings with her partner without having been judged or a comment being passed that would kind of upset her. I think that is very, very supportive. So an open communication and being supportive, being comforting, and just listening to her, being there for her, I think that's very, very important.
Will anger be one of the reactions?
Yes, it could be. The common feelings are feelings of guilt, loneliness, anger, helplessness, hopelessness, loss of control, loss of trust in her own body, anxiety, could be depression as well.
So that's a natural cycle.
Yes, it is. It's very common to feel these emotions, but only unless, they kind of start interfering significantly and clinically in the daily functioning. And so the intensity is high and they are more frequent and lasts for a longer period of time, than the usual, like more than 6 months. Then yes, of course, you must speak of to a mental health counselor or a specialist.
How would you advise a young or a minor who comes to you with a pregnancy she did not intend to happen? What process do you go through there?
Yeah, that's a very important and a very sensitive question. A minor would mostly come with the parents, right? So it's going to be the family who will come. First of all, so we do, when such a thing happens, we do individual therapy with the minor, and then we would some sort of education and therapy, psychoeducate the parents and therapy with the parents. And then once that happens, then we will get both of them together to kind of, have a conversation amongst both the parties. When it's the individual counseling, in the individual counseling with the girl who's coming for counseling, I think some of the important things would be, the empathetic attitude of the, of the counselor, no hostility, non-judgmental, attitude, and being genuine. I think that is also another thing that's very, very important, like being really able to understand what she's saying and where is she coming from. And, as Dr. Shefani and you also said earlier, that a lot of times, the blame kind of, it's the self-blame that kind of takes over, which is very important, for the therapist to address that regret and self-blame, that, it's okay, it's all right if it's happened, but of course the future measures can be taken to prevent it. With the parent, when we are speaking with the parents, it's more developing, of course, educating them about the natural course of emotions and, the behaviors that the minor might show and might be feeling. So educating them around that and how to handle those behaviors and those feelings, and generally educating them about whichever developmental, span the girl is, right? So generally what happens around that period and how all of them that can kind of, come combine and result in, you know, whatever emotions or behaviors or personality, you know, traits that she's showing. And also, then finally, when we get the both of them together, it's basically, you know, again, both the parties communicating with one another and trying to be on the same page. So that's the goal, that both of them should be on the same page.
So Dr. Shefali here, she has a diploma in medical law from NLSIU. I have to ask her this. In 1997, I discovered I was pregnant with my second baby. At my first visit to the gynecologist, she asked if I'd like a sex determination test. Amniocentesis, as she called it. Quite confused, I asked why. And she said, your first child is a daughter. You have a girl. And she said, many of our patients ask for a test because they didn't want a girl again. Dr. Shefali, I never went back to that clinic again. And I have no excuses for not reporting it. How should a common citizen react when she finds out that sex determination with an intent to abort a female fetus is happening at some place? So do I file an FIR? Do I report it to the medical council on their website?
So nowadays it's absolutely illegal to even ask what is sex. So maybe a week before delivery also people keep on asking because obviously that curiosity is there. Mm-hmm. Fully 9-month pregnant lady would ask, now I can't do anything, doctor, can't you tell me now? But it's a big no. In Indian law, the doctors are jailed and the licenses are taken off if it is found out that that sex determination is being done. So there's a very strict PCP and DT Act. So all the people who have ultrasound machines, they have to have that registration, the license, and it has to be displayed everywhere. Sex determination is not done. In smaller places, maybe in small towns of India, it's still being done. Okay, but that is absolutely illegal. And this is basically a jailable offense. So you can either put in FIR and later report to MCI. Okay. So, but this absolutely has to be, you know, this practice has to stop in India. But because it is like Bangalore or metros, nobody will even utter a word. Even our doctor colleagues, we don't say that what sex are you carrying. It's always a surprise for all of us.
It took till 2022 for our country to give equal abortion rights to both married and unmarried women up till 24 weeks. What other legal changes do you look forward to that will give a woman absolute rights to her bodily integrity in her reproductive lifespan?
Actually, India is far ahead in abortion law as compared to the rest of the world. Okay, like Europe and all, they will not even scan that whatever deformed baby you have, please bear with it. They're not going to even talk about termination. So that way, we have been very liberal. And unmarried women have as much as right as married women to abort. It has been there forever, from 1971, that Medical Termination Act. But from 20 weeks to 24 weeks has recently come in, which is actually a big advantage because many anomalies develop over time. And 19 weeks, they are in the developmental phase and we have a suspicion. And then suddenly 20 weeks deadline comes and you can't do anything after that. And, you know, wash your hands, okay, I can't do an illegal termination. So now, thankfully, Supreme Court has extended that guideline to 24 weeks where we can have time to check it out, confirm, take second opinion, and be very sure that there is an abnormality in the baby which has to be terminated. So that way, I think India has done fairly well. And beyond 24 weeks terminating, I think, you know, in this, most of the people are aware, educated nowadays. They have a fair idea by 24 weeks that they are pregnant. After that, I think it's one of a case where they want to terminate, which should actually not be allowed. It's not that safe for the mother and baby. And baby is not fully viable, but baby will still be born alive at that time. And if you don't resuscitate and all, it is so hard breathing that few hours, baby is crying and you're trying to struggle to live. So this is actually humanly not fair that it should be allowed. So 24 weeks is a good enough time.
Thank you, Dr. Shefali and Sunanda. If you have questions on this episode, write to us at this email, editor@thehindu.co.in, with the subject line, Women Uninterrupted. For anxiety and other mental health concerns, call Kiran, the 24/7 toll-free National Mental Health Helpline at 1-800-599-0019. Again, 1-800-599-0019. Signing off on this episode of the Women Uninterrupted podcast, brought to you by The Hindu.